In the construction business and tired of dealing with the indifference of big corporate suppliers? Quality Supply and Tool on South Harding Street understands. For over 25 years, owner Kevin Anne has had a different approach.
We at Quality Supply and Tool take pride in being a locally owned family business committed to service. And every customer's needs are different, and we truly believe in shaping our business to our customers' needs. That's what separates us from the competition.
That's Quality Supply and Tool with additional locations in Bloomington, Jeffersonville, and Lafayette to serve Hoosiers better. Partner with Quality Supply and Tool and think outside the box store.
Only the best run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it. He has won his fourth Indianapolis 500.
Beyond the Bricks with jQuery and Mike Thompson on 93.5 and 107.5. The Fan.
Hello and how are you? From the Bet365 Command Center, that's where I am located. My name is Jake Query, along with Mike Thompson, and it is Beyond the Bricks here in the month of May, talking about, of course, the audio, the commercials, the music, the characters, the side stories that all make up the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the Indianapolis 500 into what it is. It is a pleasure once again to be able to speak with you tonight, and thank you to those who have passed along kind sentiments about this show and how it accentuates for them the experience of the month of May. Thanks as always again to Corbin Lingenfelter, who is hanging out with us and helping coordinate everything and do all the heavy lifting for Mike and myself. And Mike, as I have mentioned before, you probably tire of me saying it, but I will say it again. This program for me, I simply hop into the seat in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon, and you're actually the guy that knows where everything is and knows all the navigation and is able to accumulate everything for this program with a vast audio collection. And once again, you have dipped into your archives for some pretty fascinating stuff tonight.
Yeah, I went a little bit off the board tonight with a topic. I thought it would be kind of fun, you know, because it's fun because sometimes people send in some ideas, and we actually have an idea for later in the week that somebody sent in and gave to me. So, but I went a little off the board, I'll admit, for tonight's topic, but I think it's going to be a fun one. I think people are going to really enjoy it.
If you go to this year's Indianapolis 500-mile race, you will see, surely, veterans. That goes without saying. Scott Dixon's been doing this quite a long time. And, of course, he already has won one Indianapolis 500. Is this the year that he wins another? That remains to be seen. Elio Castroneves is in his drive for five. Dixon with 21 starts at the Indianapolis 500. Elio Castroneves himself, of course, has been coming out here and racing since 2001. Tony Kanaan is one that is still seen around the racetrack and possibly, depending on what happens, could fill in. Although that seems unlikely for the McLaren team, but we shall see what happens there in terms of actual race day itself, whether or not Kanaan, who is a veteran, gets into the car. But the reality is this, the reason I say all of those drivers, and for that matter, the young drivers that we have as well, that even for the best drivers, even for those that have the long-standing, illustrious careers, even for those like Scott Dixon, who lead more laps than anybody in the history of the Indianapolis 500, even for someone like Al Unser, who won four Indianapolis 500s, or the championships that are won for a Mario Andretti, the multiple wins, 67 of them in open wheel for A.J. Foyt. For every driver, the day comes, Mike, and it's hard to believe because as a fan or as a media member in racing, oftentimes you feel like a guy may never retire. Then the day comes when they do retire, and then you blink your eyes and they've been retired 10 years. It's kind of how things go in sports. Father Time is undefeated. But today we look back on some of the great careers, right, in terms of some of the drivers that finally knew that the time to put the helmet up into the shelf finally came calling.
That's right. I thought we'd take a look at some retirements and how people actually chose to step out of the cockpit. I thought that would be kind of a fun and interesting topic tonight. And I agree with you. It's interesting to think back. You sit there and say, well, didn't that person just retire a couple of years ago? And it, like you said, it's 10 or 12 or 15 years ago. And the conversation talking about our first person we're going to talk about, I still think about this only happening a few years ago, and it's been, what, 30 years ago now. So it's just one of those things that, like you said, Father Time's undefeated, just marches on.
It is amazing to think that one Anthony Joseph Foyt Jr., better known as simply AJ in Indianapolis, first came to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway to run the Indianapolis 500 in 1958. As a matter of fact, when he spun out in that race, it was in a post-race interview where he was asked if he would come back and return to Indianapolis, and little did anybody, probably including AJ, know at that time that he would return for 34 more Indianapolis 500s. And it's hard to believe that when AJ Foyt, for example, won his record fourth at that time Indianapolis 500, that he did so just 19 years after arriving in Indianapolis and would have obviously another 16 yet to go in pursuit of number five that he would always be chasing. But to think about the fact, Mike, which is very surreal, that when AJ Foyt ran his last race in 1992, it was 34 years after his arrival. And it is oh so bizarre to think that that has been nearly 34 years ago. That is an example right there of not only how time flies, but also at the end of his career, how long it must have felt for so many people that were able to see his career in its totality.
And one of my favorite things that AJ Foyt has said is, we talked about the Delta Force intros. There was one of the Delta Force intros where they got all the living 500 winners together. And they all did their little speech and their little thing where, you know, Jack Villeneuve, 1995, you know, Juan Montoya, you know, they each said who, you know, what year they won, or, you know, Bobby Unser gave his three victories. And then AJ Foyt said, you know, I came here in 1958 and I've never left. And that's my kind of favorite thing about AJ Foyt, is that he came in 1958 and he ran all those races, and you'll still see him in Gasoline Alley this year. He's never left. That's my favorite part about AJ Foyt. It's just so, in the day that AJ Foyt's not around, it's just going to be such a gut punch to all of us, because he's just so constant. He's just such a presence. His garages are the same every year, right? You walk into Gasoline Alley and the garages are always the same, and you're going to see AJ out on the golf cart at some point. And He's like a national monument almost, right? I mean, he's like the Washington Monument. It's always going to be there, right? And that to me is AJ.
In the 75th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race, the Diamond Jubilee Edition, as Bob Jenkins, the late great Bob Jenkins, called it in 1991, AJ Foyt, as Mike had just mentioned, started in the front row. As a matter of fact, he had the second starting position, middle of row one, in 1991. But Mike mentioned a suspension issue after 25 laps would retire his car. He would finish 26th. On the radio broadcast in 1991, it was mentioned, as it was widely speculated and talked about in 1991, that could be the final race of Anthony Joseph Foyt Jr. It was not. He would return in 1992 and return triumphantly, because starting in the 23rd position, reality is you've got to be impressed by it, Mike. Maybe at that time no one knew definitively it would be the last race for AJ Foyt, but to come home with a top 10 and be running at the end, pretty serious accomplishment for somebody in their 35th start.
Especially that day, as cold as it was, correct, as much attrition as it was. I mean, that was not an easy day, obviously. That was a war of attrition, and he came out with a top 10, as you said, in his, you know, in what ended up being his final championship start.
In 1993, AJ Foyt was entered to run the Indianapolis 500-mile race, but abruptly decided to retire on pole day. The rumor started circulating around the paddock and around the garage area that, in fact, AJ may have made up his mind. His team car, which had been driven by Robbie Gordon, was involved in a practice crash that morning. And AJ Foyt, I think at that time, simply saw that as the sign that it was time to start focusing on being a team owner, helping a young driver, for example, like Robbie Gordon. He got in his car. He took a lap of honor. He waved to the fans, perhaps reminiscent of 1977 when he did the same on the back of the pace car with Tony Holman after winning his fourth Indianapolis 500-mile race, and fans spilled out to wave back to him. He joined Tom Carnegie on the public address system, and two of the legends of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway were on the microphone on that day in 1993.
Decision, but it comes a time.
He said, it's a hard decision, But there comes a time.
The fans have brought me back as many years I've been back. But I felt like if I'm going to run a team, I can't be in a race car. Seems like every time I'm not with the car, something happens. And I realized that this morning. Just as if I want to get to green, the yellow come out is my other car. So if I'm going to be a successful car owner, I've got to spend 110% of my time with the car and not think of AJ. So Mr. Bannon, Ford Motor Company, this decision was made about, well, when Robbie hit the wall is when I made the decision. I intended to qualify, and the car's a very fast car I got out of. I know it'll make the race very easy. I'd have no problem putting it in the show. And I think, like I said, it comes a time. I love all y'all a lot. You've been great fans. I love you. And I'll still be back, and we'll still be up in the winner's circle. Thank you.
By the way, incidentally, that year, Robbie Gordon would qualify for the Indianapolis 500. As a matter of fact, he started in the 25th position. He would bring the car home two spots lower after a gearbox issue sidelined him after 165 laps. But as an owner, Mike, goes without saying, AJ Foyt's goal of being a preeminent car owner would come true at the end of the decade, the century, depending on which way you want to determine Y2K. But obviously, Kenny Breck would deliver on AJ Foyt's promise to get his team to the mountaintop at the Indianapolis 500 from an ownership standpoint.
That's right. Obviously, got him there as an owner, you know, a victory there. But one of the things I love best about that clip is AJ showing that vulnerability, and Tom Carnegie, if you watch that clip, putting his hand on his shoulder to help steady him. And you know, AJ just needed that moment of quick steadying, but you got a little glimpse of AJ that you hadn't seen before there, you know, because people who know AJ will tell you that sometimes, you know, he's obviously got that kind of gruff exterior, but he's got a heart of gold as well. And Tom Carnegie kind of steadying him, I think, is so important in that clip. It's just one of the really important moments in the history of Speedway, I think.
Now, there are some drivers that did not retire nearly as abruptly by stepping out of the car on a day when it would be thought that people would come out to see them and see them throughout the course of the month. Like, for example, our next guest, who is no stranger to this program. As I had mentioned earlier, if you listen to this show, one of the true gentlemen to ever strap into the cockpit and wear a helmet at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Johnny Rutherford made 24 starts in Indianapolis. Mike, we've talked about it before, but perhaps it's worth repeating again. He had to be persistent in terms of his pursuit of greatness at Indianapolis, because while he has one of the most impressive running records in Indy 500 history with three Indianapolis 500 wins, it did not come to him necessarily easily or immediately at the outset of his career, and it really wasn't until he had been out there a number of times where everything came together for him.
No, that's right. And I learned a lot talking to him last year about the fact of how really that accident he had at Eldora really set him back, and that it was years before he really felt right again in the IndyCar cockpit. And it really set him further back than I ever really knew and kind of understood. So, you know, it took him really years to get back in it. By then he's looking for a top ride. So it took him, by the time he finally got with McLaren and got that opportunity, you know, a lot of time had gone by in his career. And now I kind of joked with him a few times about it, but I said, you know, do you think you'd have had, you know, in this kind of society with, you know, Twitter and all these things, people calling for people's job, if they don't perform in 1 year, people are wanting people fired, you know. And it took Johnny, you know, as long as it took him to finally win the race. You know, I said, do you think you'd have, and he said, it'd have been a lot tougher now, you know, these days than it would have been then. So, you know, obviously when he finally broke through in 1974, then he went on an unbelievable run, you know, win in 74, second in 75, win again in 76, another win in 80. And as you mentioned, one of the true gentlemen. And quick aside, Jake, how good was he on our interview with him the other night? I mean, just fabulous stuff, fabulous stories. And he's just so gracious with his time. And, you know, I was just so proud that he accepted our invitation and just happy to have him.
He was delightful, no question about it, as well as insightful. Two things that are the two that you could ask for, and gracious, I thought, in being humble and appreciative of our invitation onto the show. And of course, it was absolutely our thrill and honor to interview Johnny Rutherford. His last Indy 500 as a start would come in 1988. As a matter of fact, he started 30th that year, finished 22nd with an accident on lap 100 or after completing 107 laps. Johnny Rutherford did stay around the sport and still, for that fact, does to this day, but worked on the IMS radio network as an analyst on numerous occasions, still talking about his desire to get into the race car. But finally, in 1994, officially, Johnny Rutherford retired from open wheel racing. And it was with our very own Mike Thompson that he had talked about it.
It was a situation where all of the guys in my group, Bobby, Al, AJ, Mario, had announced his intentions to retire, and we had all raced together for several years, and it was just, you know, that particular time, and I was talking with Betty, and I said, you know, I think I'm going to hang it up. And she didn't mind that at all. You know, she thought that would, you know, she said, well, that's your decision. And so I decided I would do it. Al had made his announcement. And I just went over, and I went into AJ's garage. And I said, AJ, have you got a car I can take a ride in around here? I'm going to retire. And he never hesitated, spun around and asked his chief mechanic, is there a car ready to run right now that Rutherford can take and run around? And he said, yes, that car. And it was the car that AJ had retired in a year before. And anyway, they got it ready, and I went out and made a couple of laps around the speedway and came in. And that was it, you know. Tom Carnegie interviewed me, and it was, you know, that was the end of my racing career, virtually. I didn't even run sprint cars anymore. I had graduated, you know, it retired out of sprint car racing. And so anyway, that was it.
And in 1994, when Johnny Rutherford would retire, it would be the last race for Mario Andretti at the Indianapolis 500. Mario, of course, running 29 times, most known for his win in 1969, perhaps, although definitely known for some very close finishes and controversial ones as well. In 1994, he started in the ninth position. He finished 32nd. A fuel system took him out of that race, but he did run 407. He had his 407th career start in kart with the championship races. And in Laguna Seca in October, he had made that start. He wanted one important souvenir, as he discussed with Mike, as his career was coming to an end after that race at Laguna Seca in October. And Mario Andretti talked about his retirement with Mike Thompson.
I've heard a rumor, now I don't know if this is true, but I heard a rumor that the only thing you were upset about was that they cleaned it. You wanted it to come off the track, it could be in your garage exactly the way it came off the track.
You know everything. You know, this guy knows all the details. It's very true. When I, right at the end of the race, I said to Carl, I'd like to have the car. He said, yeah, of course. And I said, don't touch it. And you know what? Because it had a blown engine. And I said, just leave it. And here we go. You know, my lovely, wonderful mechanics, all those dudes out there, they said, no way, man. They get it race ready. They freshen everything up. Cosworth put a fresh engine. And Cosworth sent me that engine, the shell of that engine, they made it into a table to send it to me for Christmas. I still have it in my sports bar. You know, but and the car came, was just race ready. It's still there, ready to go, ready to do donuts in my driveway. You know, but, and I wanted the car dirty. I wanted it just the way it ended, but there you go. How did you know that?
The ultimate compliment from Mario Andretti to Mike Thompson, the ultimate gift for Mario Andretti as his career came to an end, being able to keep the car from Laguna Seca that he would have raced in his final start. There are those drivers that left with a flair to an extent, utilizing the Indianapolis Motor Speedway radio network to get their message out when their career would come to a close. We'll tell you who we're talking about, and we'll let you hear in their own words, as we do on Beyond the Bricks.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Even if you don't have a Kroger store nearby, you can still get Kroger groceries delivered that are guaranteed fresh. Order on the app and your groceries hit the road. With prices so low, you won't believe the savings. Get $25 off your first two orders, plus unlimited free delivery for $59 a year with a Boost membership. We'll bring all the fresh groceries you need from the store to your door. Kroger, fresh for everyone. $35 minimum order excludes alcohol and gift cards. Offer valid on delivery only with a digital coupon. Restrictions may apply. See site for details.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Every day, we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you're ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
This is Sid Collins with the latest news on the 500-mile race from the Speedway at Indianapolis. Meet Johnny Parsons. Johnny's the winner of the 500-mile race here in 1950 and has a good chance to repeat this year.
Well, I certainly hope so, Sid. I would like to get back in that victory lane again.
The race drivers here at the Speedway will again this year depend on the experience of the makers of Mobil Gas Special for the hot fuels they'll be using this May at Indianapolis. And that's a good reason why Mobil Gas Special is such a terrific gasoline for all the new 55 and 56 cars. Now, Johnny Parsons, you drive a 1956 Ford. Have you tried Mobil Gas Special in it?
Yes, I have, Sid. In fact, I have a Mobil credit card, and I use it from coast to coast and also in my race cars.
Now, there you have it from an expert. Sound engineering developments by the makers of Mobil Gas Special have made fuels best for race cars as well as for your automobile. Get Mobil Gas Special at every sign of the Flying Red Horse.
Johnny Parsons, the winner of the 1950 Indianapolis 500-mile race, as you just heard referenced by the chief announcer and the founder of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network, Sid Collins, from that interview in 1951, where Johnny Parsons, by the way, did not defend his Indianapolis 500 championship. He would finish 21st after starting 8th in the 1951 Indianapolis 500. But he did make 10 starts over the course of his career. Did Johnny Parsons. He won the championship in 1949, as we mentioned, the 500 in 1950. He won 11 championship races, including one at Darlington in 1950. But his last Indianapolis 500 would come in 1958. And in 1959, he practiced, but he decided that it was indeed time to call it quits, which he did on Coast to Coast, the radio program, with his friend Sid Collins of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network. Here is Johnny Parsons announcing his retirement at the end of the 1950s in 1959.
Now we've moved our tape recorder to Gasoline Alley. Here in the Bardol Garage, seated to my right is Johnny Parsons. To my left, Mr. Fred Gerhardt, the owner of the Bardol Special, number 45. And Johnny Parsons this morning at about 11 o'clock at a press conference made a rather surprising announcement to us all. He told us that he was retiring from active participation here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And John, as a longtime and good friend of yours and a man who's watched you run here for 10 consecutive races, I will be disappointed not to see you run, but I'm pleased that if you find that you should stop running here at Indianapolis, that you've made a wise decision. What actually brought about this final comment of yours this morning for the press?
Well, thank you very much, Sid. Well, yesterday, prior to qualification time, we were on the racetrack with the car 45, the Bardol Special, And I was trying to obtain speed or reach speed, qualification speed, to be one of the 33 entries in the race this year. But we couldn't get up speed enough, so we made some chassis adjustments and backed it in the qualification line, hoping to, generally said, as you know, when you back the car in line, you automatically gain about from 3/4 of a mile an hour to 1.5 miles an hour because you're concentrating on getting the car in the race, and it's an all-out effort. So we tried this, but our best lap was 141 miles an hour, so the crew called me in. Mr. Gerhardt and DeOrion, the mechanic on the car, thought that it wasn't fast enough to get a starting booth in this 43rd annual running of the 500-mile race, so they called me in, and when they opened the track for practice, we went back out after making some more chassis adjustments and some mechanical changes, and tried to go a little bit faster, but couldn't do it. So in all fairness to Fred Gerhardt, the owner of the automobile, and the master mechanic, Fred DeOrion, of which I've been affiliated with for since 1945, I suggested to them to obtain another driver to get a starting position in this year's race.
Well, John, we saw you drive here first in 1949. As a rookie, you started 12th and you came in second, which was a tremendous start at Indianapolis. You were probably one of the more popular drivers to ever even come here because of your tremendous competitive spirit and championships won on the West Coast in midgets and in other automotive competition. The next year, you won the 500 in 1950, starting fifth and coming in first. And last year, you started sixth and came in 12th and qualified at 144. What do you think in your heart and mind kept you from getting the speed? You admitted to me before we talked here on the air that the car is in good shape. Just what is it that makes a man slow down or begin to wonder about this racetrack?
Well, I've been, as you mentioned before, I've been in 10 Indianapolis races here, and I've done everything that you can do here at Indianapolis.
And very well, too, John.
Thank you, sir. And the champions come and go, you know, and I guess it's my turn to go. And with all fairness, as I said, to the car owner and mechanic and the automobile itself, the car is very capable of obtaining speeds up to 144 or 45 miles an hour. So the most logical thing to do to my way of thinking is to let someone else drive the automobile. It's a terrific automobile. I drove it last year and qualified an average speed of 144.683, which was sixth fastest of the entire race meet. But this year, I feel in my own heart that I can't get the job done, so I hate to admit it, but Sid, it's the absolute truth, and I'd rather do this than to bend the car up and cause anybody any trouble.
Well, John, you're 40 years old, and you'll be 41 on July the 4th, and the Firecrackers will salute your birthday once again. And as the celebration of Independence Day, I think independent thinking is a very valuable thing in the racing career. You're the only one who can possibly know how well you can do on a racetrack. Your car owner can, if he were the type of man to insist or be disappointed and tell you, you might try to do it for him or the pit crew or your wife or your fans. You know what you can do, and I think the choice being yours is a wise one.
Thank you very much, Sid. Those are kind words.
And we do want understood that Johnny Parsons is not retiring from automobile racing, just from the big car here at the Indianapolis Speedway. Right, John? You'll still compete in midgets.
That's correct. I intend to compete in midget racing, also sprint car racing on half-mile dirt tracks and late model stock car racing for the United States Automobile Club.
So your friends listening to us now around the country will know that Johnny will still be on hand when you're out there waving to him, huh?
Thank you very much, yes.
We'll be looking forward to it. That was Johnny Parsons, who will still be with us here at the Speedway, I'm sure, to attend and watch the races in years to come, and his spirit will live on as a great 500-mile champion in 1950.
And incidentally, Mike, one of our favorite trivial anecdotes, Johnny Parsons, the only driver. There are two men to have their name on the BorgWarner Trophy in variation. Al Unser is listed as Al Unser for the first three of his wins, Al Unser Sr. for the fourth, because by then his son, of course, was racing as well. And then Juan Montoya, who was Juan Montoya in 2000, but by the time he would win his second, he became Juan Pablo Montoya. But Johnny Parsons is the only name misspelled on the Borg Warner, correct, Mike?
That is correct. It is the only name that is misspelled. What's interesting is he mentioned about how the car was so good it could make the race with somebody else. Well, it did. Paul Russo ended up putting the car in the show, qualified 27th, and got a top 10 finish out of it. So Johnny Parsons was right. I mean, the car was good enough to make the race, and it did.
Just out of curiosity, has there ever been discussion, I think there was at one time, was there not, of correcting the spelling error of his name on the BorgWarner, but I think they went ahead and just decided to keep it. For those that are curious, it is listed as J-O-H-N-N-Y, and the correct spelling is I-E, correct?
That's correct. There was discussion at one point, I think, of changing it to make it correct, but they decided to leave it the way it is.
He would not be the only driver to announce his retirement to Sid Collins, because another former 500 winner did exactly that. As a matter of fact, from that same era, Pat Flaherty would win the race in 1956, started on pole that year, as a matter of fact, and then would come back and in 1959, after an accident where he had suffered a really bad arm injury just a couple of months after winning the Indianapolis 500. And reality is, Mike, that began the unfortunate, of course, evolution in terms of his health that would lead to his retirement and decision to walk away from racing.
That's right. I mean, that really set him back. I mean, he was never really 100% after that. I mean, he did come back. He won a stock car race, and he actually led the 500 after that, but it really did take a lot out of him, and he was out for almost 2 years. So, I mean, it was a major accident, and it set his career back dramatically.
He came back and raced in 1959, and in that year, as a matter of fact, would start 18th, finish 19th. But by 1961, Pat Flaherty decided that it was time to retire from the Indianapolis 500. He did the same as Johnny Parsons. He did so by talking to Sid Collins.
In 1956, Pat Flaherty, hailing from Chicago, Illinois, sat on the pole here at the Speedway and came in to win the 500 that same day. His greatest thrill, I'm sure, in the racing business, which he had pursued for a long, long time. And last night, Pat Flaherty, who returned to the racetrack after laying off last year for an operation on an injured arm, which he received in August of the year he won the 500 back in 56, Pat announced to Danny Oakes, his chief mechanic, that he was going to retire from the sport. Pat, what made you reach that decision?
Well, Sid, I just couldn't get my old timing back and get that college spirit built up into myself. You know, when you drive these race cars, you really have to drive them for the love of it and forget about the money, because there isn't that much involved. And you have to have spirit to go along with that your driving ability. And I just thought the time had come where I just couldn't get everything coordinated again.
Did you feel a bit unsure, some fear on the track, Pat?
Well, I thought I could develop it with a little running and that, but I just, I know it's the first few laps and that I was quite a bit tense, and I found myself doing things that I knew better, and yet I wasn't making corrections on them, so I figured I better just climb out.
How old are you now, Pat Flaherty?
35.
Which certainly gives you a long time to do other things in your life, I trust. You have some future plans?
Sure do. I'd like to go to work for one of the automotive accessory agencies that are connected with the automotive racing game here.
Well, Bill Cheeseburg got in your Dean Van Line special this morning and qualified it, so everything is under control as far as your car owner is concerned.
Well, they're in real good shape, I think.
Pat, will you be giving some advice to drivers or working in a pit crew on race day?
Well, you know, it's pretty tough to keep a driver away from giving advice to other drivers, even though sometimes it's not wanted, but I'll be around there, sure. I wouldn't miss the race.
Well, you've only been retired now less than 24 hours, but do you feel any emotional reaction to giving up the sport, which has been your life work?
Well, it's quite a letdown, of course, but after all, there's other things, and I think I can be just as successful in them as I was in the automotive racing. And
well, best of luck to you, Pat.
Thanks, Ed.
Right, that was Pat Flaherty, who won the 500-mile race here in 1956, now announcing his retirement from racing.
Again, Pat Flaherty announcing his retirement to Sid Collins. And Flaherty, as Mike had mentioned, did run a few USAC races in 1961 and ran a championship race in 1963 at Milwaukee. And then also, he was a guy that liked birds. I'll just simply leave it that way. Right, Mike?
Apparently. Now, I wrote him for an autograph as a kid, and I got the autograph back. And also in the autograph was a couple pictures of pigeons. Now, there was no context to them. There were just pictures of pigeons in with the autograph. And so I thought it was kind of strange until later in life, I learned that he raced pigeons. And that was what he was really, really interested in later in life, was that he was very successful as a pigeon racer. And it's one of two different times that I've sent off to people for autographs, and they sent me pictures of various animals. There was a guy named Mike McGree, great midget racing champion. And I sent him for an autograph, and he sent me, he was involved in breeding of horses, things like that. And he sent me all kinds of pictures of all their different horses and said, here's our newest horse. And he wrote all these different things on it and everything, which I thought was great. I mean, he's so proud of all his horses and stuff. So, but yes, I did get random pictures of pigeons from Pat Flaherty at one point.
I thought for sure you were about to tell me that you got an autograph from Mike Tyson, and he also sent pictures of pigeons. Because I think Mike Tyson raised pigeons in New York at one point, but there were a lot of eccentric hobbies probably of Mike Tyson. But nonetheless, do you still have the pigeon photos? That's the better question.
Oh, yeah, of course I do. I keep all that. I told you I also kept the napkin.
How does one race pigeons, by the way? How does one race pigeons?
I don't know. I'd like to know more about that, actually. But I kept the napkin. I got a napkin, a pink napkin that Louis Meyer sent me just randomly in a package as well. But yes, I got these pictures. And the best part about the pigeon pictures is one of them's like a profile picture of the pigeon, and then one's like a full length picture of the pigeon in flight. And it's like they were all like hero cards of the pigeons.
Upcoming on future editions of Beyond the Bricks, we will not only play for you some of the audio of the play-by-play commentator simply saying, here they come and there they go when doing pigeon play-by-play, but we also will have exclusive clips of Mike Thompson appearing on Hoarders, right? So, you know, we got the...
Yeah, unfortunately, that's accurate.
We have that to look forward to. We'll come back. We'll take a look at some of the more retirement stories from the history of the Indianapolis 500 as they sounded when they happened from the Bet365 On Command Centers where we're broadcasting, and this is Beyond the Bricks.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
The weather's chilly and your allergies won't let up, right? Enter Aspire Allergy and Sinus. Aspire patients find lasting relief with no more winter spent suffering. Plus, Aspire Allergy offers same-day results, no more waiting. Skip endless drugstore visits. Save in the long run with Aspire Allergy's long-term solutions. No more empty promises, just the relief you truly deserve. Ready to conquer your allergies? Visit AspireAllergy.com and schedule your appointment today. That's AspireAllergy.com.
Is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5
The Fan. This is Sid Collins with the latest news on the 500-mile race from the Speedway at Indianapolis. Meet Troy Ruttman, winner of the race here in 1952, and Troy figures to get back in victory lane again this May.
Sid, it sure would be a thrill. I'd like to be back in there again.
Fans, again this year, the drivers of the race cars at Indianapolis have chosen Mobil Oil for best performance. As you know, the makers of Mobil Oil are experts on lubrication. That's another reason why Mobil Oil Special will improve the performance of every car on the highway. At Troy Ruttman, you drive a 1956 Chevrolet. Have you tried Mobil Oil Special in it?
Yes, Sid, as you know, I was using Mobil Oil in 1952 when I won the race. I've been using it actually since 1949 in my pleasure cars, and everything is wonderful.
And there you have it from an expert. For smoother, trouble-free operation of your automobile, get Mobil Oil Special at every sign of the Flying Red Horse.
Sid Collins talking to Troy Ruttman, still the youngest winner in the history of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. Along with Mike Thompson, my name is Jake Query, inside the Bet365 On Command Center. And this is Beyond the Bricks. When Troy Ruttman was talking about winning the race in 1952, that actually would be the second start of the next gentleman that we're going to talk about, who made 10 starts in the Indianapolis 500. That clip that you heard was from 1956. In the 1956 race, Gene Hartley finished in the 11th position. He would finish one spot higher for his lone top 10 finish in 1957. But Gene Hartley, another of those that we're going to hear from tonight, Mike, just in terms of how things began in terms of the second phase of a career, talking about retirements tonight, which is the subject matter of tonight's episode of Beyond the Bricks. Gene Hartley, one of those, again, that used the radio, right, to announce Mike his retirement.
That's right. That's what I think is neat about these clips, and one of the reasons I wanted to do this show is because, you know, people respected Sid so much and respected the radio network and saw the reach of the radio network so much that they decided that that's where they wanted to make their retirement announcement, coast to coast with Sid, go up to the booth with Sid and say, hey, you know what? I've decided to hang him up. But that's how much they respected Sid, how much they respected the radio network was, hey, I want to hang it up. And when it's time for me to hang it up, I'm going to go up and talk to Sid and do it. So I just think that that's really interesting. It just shows you how much that just in a few years' time, Sid had become so influential there at the Speedway.
As I had mentioned, Gene Hartley ran 10 times at Indianapolis. And after those 10, when he announced his retirement officially to Sid Collins in 1963, it turns out that he was not the only of that era to retire. There was another that he would race against, as a matter of fact, during his 10 Indianapolis 500 starts that Sid also would mention in this clip. This from 1963.
Back at the Indianapolis Speedway once again, alongside me as a guest you've heard about for 10 races at the world's greatest race cars here, Gene Hartley, who this morning had some rather shocking news for us.
Well, I don't know if it's shocking, Sid, but as of today, I've retired from race driving.
Well, I'm sure it's shocking to your many fans who have followed you in the midgets and also in your racing career since that first event back in 1947. Gene, what made you decide to quit?
Well, Sid, the main reason I quit is I'm in some businesses that is taking too much of my time, and I can't spend as much time out here at the track as you need. More or less, I'm a split personality because I've been trying to keep a business going and still being out here as much as possible. And I can make the race, I know that, but I'm not in the racing mood that I used to be, so why deprive the car and also the crew and the car owner and mechanic of a good chance of winning this race?
Gene Hartley, at age 37, do you think that's about the point where some drivers get out of the racing mood?
No, I think this is up to the individual. A lot of fellas that's older than I am have very good racing ability, and they're still in the racing mood. This is entirely up to the individual.
Of course, you'll still be around racing because you are an owner and part of a racetrack.
This is true. I'm in the promoting end of racing, and also I have a couple other businesses that are keeping me occupied.
Gene, I think a very interesting sidelight here is the fact that your dad, Ted Hartley, drove race cars for almost 40 years and is still driving, even though not very often. He hasn't retired yet, and here you are retiring.
Yes, so I guess, Sid, I'm the oldest one of the two of us. He hasn't officially retired, although he hasn't driven since 1961. But he started out 25 years before I did, and I'm beating him in retiring, so figure this out, eh?
Gene, when you think back over the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, sitting up here in this third level of the Master Control Tower, what stands out in your mind in your racing career here?
Well, actually, I think the most outstanding thing that happened to me here at the Speedway is when I did finish my first 500-mile race in 1957, when I qualified to be a member of the 100-mile-an-hour club.
You went a long time then before you finished the whole 500 miles, didn't you?
This is true. I was out here struggling for several years before I finally was able to finish my first full 500 miles, and to me, this was quite an achievement.
You came in 11th a couple of times, and your best finish was 10th, as I recall.
That's true. It was 10th in 1957. It's been my best finish. I've had a lot of mechanical trouble and then during the race and also some other things that we won't go into because in 53, I had a little other problems out here.
Well, Gene, you've certainly done a lot of driving, particularly in midgets, and you won the first USAC-sponsored feature event at the Fort Wayne Coliseum in the indoor midget track.
That's true. Actually, midgets has always been my first love because they're smaller and we can run closer competition, although the money has always been in the big cars, and this is the reason I run the Speedway in some of the big car tracks.
Well, Gene, is this retirement going to stick? You know, many drivers say they're going to quit and they come back the next year.
No, Sid, I only quit once, so this is going to stick.
Well, best of luck to you, Gene Hartley.
Well, thank you, Sid, and thanks to everybody, because I've really enjoyed the racing game.
Another man who enjoyed the racing game is Jack Turner of Seattle, Washington. Jack, as we reported earlier to you on this broadcast, had bad luck this morning. His car became airborne in the number 4 turn, wound up upside down and on fire. He is now this evening in the Methodist Hospital in Indianapolis suffering from third-degree burns on his hands and arms in particular, where surgery will be required later on. He also has other injuries. Jack Turner has announced his retirement from automobile racing. He had bad luck here last year on that same number 4 turn as he became involved in a collision. And in 1961, he was the principal in the main stretch accident in which 5 cars were involved, and Jack's car got way up in the air, some said as high as 30 feet, bouncing then to a conclusion. And Jack, I think, has taken the hint now that perhaps he should get out of active competition. So Jack Turner of Seattle, Washington, and Gene Hartley of Indianapolis, Indiana, announced the retirement today. Now stay tuned for the greatest spectacle in racing.
From 1963, Sid Collins, Gene Hartley, by the way, passed away in March of 1994. That was 10 years after another subject from tonight. Johnny Parsons passed away in 1984, but eight years before Pat Flaherty, who passed in 2002. As for Jack Turner, he lived until September of 2004. But, Mike, tell me a little more about the career of Jack Turner.
Jack Turner was a super nice guy. I actually met Jack Turner, and what's he was known for mainly was, unfortunately, was those accidents. And I talked to him about that. He said the same thing he told Donald on several occasions, which is people only remember that I flipped over here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway three times, which he did. Three consecutive years he had accidents where his car flipped. But he was a national midget champion 2 years in a row, and he was a great midget driver. He's in the Midget Racing Hall of Fame, and he was a super nice guy. Just very, very friendly, very good with fans and fan mail and things like that. But he often lamented the fact that, you know, people only know me because I'm Jack Turner, you know, the guy who went flipping, you know, at the Speedway 3 years in a row. And they didn't really look at the real record he had as a driver.
A lot of fun tonight, taking a look back at the racing careers and the announcements of retirement for some of the legends of the Speedway. Of course, some still with us, thankfully, and we are fortunate for that. A.J. Foyt, Mario Andretti, Johnny Rutherford, also hearing from Johnny Parsons, Pat Flaherty, Gene Hartley, and Jack Turner that you just heard, and of course, Sid Collins as well, and for that matter, Tom Carnegie as well, who not only did you hear interviewing A.J. Foyt, but you could hear those dulcet tones in the background of some of those interviews. My name is Jake Query. Mike Thompson here as well. We thank you tonight for listening to Beyond the Bricks.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.